Sometimes we refer to our spiritual life and our spiritual practice, our life in the world, as two worlds. Sometimes it's called the absolute and the relative. But in fact, there is only one reality. The absolute and the relative, as we know from our chanting last night, our singing last night, are exactly the same. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. They coexist. More than coexist. They are the same reality. And yet, from an experiential point of view, there is pure awareness, and that pure awareness is like a vast starry sky. There's nothing that obscures the height. It's vast and fathomless. And that is the true nature of our mind. And so in our sitting meditation, we all touch that. I think that's why we're all here. It might not yet be conscious, but all of us, somewhere in our being, know that. I mean, how can we not know that? It is who we are. And so we can take refuge in that, in our sitting meditation, in our walking meditation, in our eating meditation. We can sit in a bigger context. We can walk in a bigger context. We can be together in a bigger context. We have been touching somewhat that bigger context this retreat wonderfully in sitting with our ancestors. Every time I walk by the altar, how wonderful, how big we are as a community, how touching it is to have our ancestors here with us. they are walking in this room with us. They are part of our Sangha. And when we come in and we enter the meditation hall and we bow, you know, we enter because and we come together because we're sitting for each other. We're sitting for the Sangha. But often by the time we sit down on our cushion, you know, it's like we're already a little bit alone. And we have to remember that the Sangha is sitting for us too. Our ancestors are sitting for us. And even just beginning to touch that as we come back to breathe in and breathe out, we begin to touch that bigger mind, that truer mind of, and we can also begin to touch what it is to sit as a Buddha. Part of sitting as a Buddha is not knowing. It's a kind of openness and a willingness to be here and to be in a place of inquiry. Because Buddhas are always alive only in this moment. They aren't alive yesterday and they aren't alive tomorrow, but they are alive right now. And so we find that in sitting this way, we have to let go of our hope for something in the future. We have to let go of our expectations of how it should be, how we should be, how others should be. And in letting go of hope and expectation, what arises is an incredible sense of optimism that we can trust this moment. Not knowing and trusting are the heads and tails of the same coin. They, you pick up one, the other one is there too. So when we come back to our breath, our body, we find a comfortable position where we can be upright. We might call to mind that we are really sitting in a very big context, a very big mind. And we're being held in that mind gently. And because it's true mind, we're being held lovingly. And even though we feel like we don't know what we're doing, because indeed we don't know what the next breath is, we don't know what the next moment is, in that context, we can trust. And it makes our heart light. So it's very easy then to come back. And this is very much the basis of practicing mindfulness. And yet, inevitably, because we also live in the relative world, after a few breaths, thoughts start coming, feelings start arising, our mind starts moving. I always say that when we face the wall, we face ourselves. We also face our ancestors. And it takes the inquiring mind to be able to know what is there. The inquiring mind allows us to keep coming back so we don't get just caught in streams of thought, in difficult emotions, in figuring things out, in psychologizing. So it's like we come back so we can step off the mind road. And we don't come back, we don't step off the mind road to push things away. We come back so that we are sitting in the lap of the Buddha in that light of awareness. We're able to shine on what is there. What it is that we think of as ourselves. It might be our pain, might be our anger, might be our fear, might just be painting our living room. But what comes up needs our awareness. And the only way we can give our true awareness to what comes up is by being truly present. So we have to keep coming back to sitting in this larger context, this spacious mind, so that we can hold it, so we can be there for ourselves without being attached. Knowing that the absolute and relative are exactly the same. No separation whatsoever. It's like the awareness is the sunlight and it illuminates all the shadows. And as we continue to practice like that, that which needs our attention, which needs our awareness, will be there. And it probably isn't painting our living room. That probably will fall away pretty quickly. Because what needs our awareness are the things that have been pushed down and not acknowledged and not allowed, the things we haven't been able to say yes to in our lives, in our hearts, in our being. And bit by bit, as we go forward together on our retreat, we find that really by just practicing like this, coming back over and over again, you know, our mindfulness does become quite clear. And when difficult things come up, we're able to be there. And we're able to be there as much as we're able to be concentrated. If our mind is not concentrated, immediately we'll distract and we'll go somewhere else. And that's just a really lovely, lovely, natural way our mind is. It protects us. So we can trust it. We can trust it, see it, and then just come back and sit in that big, spacious Buddha mind. It's okay. It's okay to be distracted. It's okay to come back. It's like breathing in, breathing out. And we just keep coming to that. And without any muscular effort, concentration arises. We don't make concentration. Yeah, over the years, so many of you, so many friends have said that, you know, they don't know why what's changing. They don't know why their life is changing, but just through practice, all of a sudden things are really different, the way they respond to things in the world. And it's not necessarily like this one-to-one relationship. You know, it's like when we go to a therapist, you know, we have a particular something that we want to look into. And there's really a great deal of value in doing that, I think. But it's sort of one-to-one. You know, we're looking at this thing that happened and we're hoping to resolve it. We're hoping to understand it in a new way. We're hoping to get free. And it is a little bit one-to-one. You know, we're doing this for this. But our practice isn't like that at all. You know, our practice is letting go and trusting what comes. Trusting the Buddha mind, which is a mind of healing, which is a mind of love, which is the mind of forgiveness, to move through us. It is who we are. So just as we don't need to make any effort for concentration to be there, other than just to practice our mindfulness. We also don't need to make any effort in trying to make difficulties go away or difficulties to come up. We don't have to work on anything. When we are concentrated, what needs our awareness will come to us. Sometimes, you know, we'll find ourselves sitting with our parents. And sometimes sitting with our parents, you know, if our hearts and minds have been able to resolve and touch that difficulty, then sitting with our parents can be very wonderful. It can help us feel much support. But so often there is unresolved difficulty with our parents. And part of our practice then is to sit with our parents as they live within us. Not as how we hope that they are, not as how we wish that the past was, but how it is living in us in this moment. And, you know, when there's difficulty there, it's like, oh, that's what we want to do. But we have to remember that it's the impeded stream that sings. It's where we're broken, that's where the light shines through. So difficulties are, oh, welcome, opportunities. And usually we have to struggle a bit with the difficulties. Sometimes we create a mess, and that's okay. But we have to practice with it. We have to practice with the mess. We have to practice with the difficulties. And we have to practice till our hearts are clear. At the last retreat, I told this story about my family, since my family's on the altar. I'll talk a little bit about my family. You know, as a young woman, I had there were areas where I felt resentful about some things in my childhood, and held my parents responsible for some of the ways things where we weren't able to be together really clearly as a family. And the first time I took the precepts with Thay. They were precepts then, and I took them with my own sort of personal understanding of what they all meant. And next time I saw Thay, he was saying very clearly that the fifth precept meant that we don't drink alcohol. And I had never drank alcohol very much. It wasn't a big deal for me. I went to see him and I said, you know, I didn't know that's what you meant. And, you know, I occasionally have a glass of wine. And he says, I want you to take them again. with the heart of not ever drinking, not taking alcohol. And because I trusted Thay and I trusted my practice, and because also it didn't much matter to me whether I had a glass of wine or not, quite honestly. But with that heart of entering that fully, I took the precepts again with him. Later they became much more explicit when they went from do not take intoxicants to aware of the suffering caused, moving them out of a negative statement into something that was positive. And then much more explicit in that realm. So I didn't, you know, really think too much about it because, as I said, it was not a big deal to me. But as I practiced and sat with my ancestors, sat with my parents, one time in deep concentration, where I was feeling a lot of pain. All of a sudden, it was like the light of mindfulness, the light of our true mind shone through, and I saw how, something so obvious, but both my parents had come from broken families due to alcoholism. I had experienced economic instability. I saw how clearly that they had provided a family that was economically stable, that was intact, that was loving, somewhat codependent, of course. But somehow they had transcended what they had been given to give me something different. And I was overwhelmed with gratitude and forgiveness. And when the difficulties that existed, you know, because of the alcoholic patterns, secrets, not including everybody, things that made for dissension in the family, that were alcoholic patterns, when they appeared, you know, I knew how to respond out of that forgiveness. And through that, I've bit by bit learned how to heal my family. So they are practicing with me, and I am practicing with them. And, you know, the Buddha mind of forgiveness and love is holding us all. And when the difficulties arise again, I take refuge there. So we begin to uncover and heal the past through our concentration, our ability to be able to be with, to be one with the suffering of the past as it lives in our own hearts and mind in the present. So in our sitting, we speak about choiceless awareness. We sit with the mind that loves equally as we sit with the mind that hates. We sit with the mind that is fearful equally as we sit with the mind that trusts. We don't leave either of them out. We don't choose one to push away the other. But we should sit in that vast, fathomless space that holds all things. This is the mind that the five mindfulness trainings arises out of. When we first begin practicing, and often, you know, I mean, for a lot of us, when we begin practicing, there's a lot of chaos, there's a lot of distraction in our minds. And, you know, that's our past, that's our culture, it's the whole collective. And so the five mindfulness trainings look like prescriptions as an antidote to that kind of chaos and distractibility and that chasing after things to try to make them better. And it's fine for the five mindfulness trainings to be prescriptive in that sense, because then they help us to train our mind so that we can sit in a way that holds holds it all, holds all of us. They help us to uncover our true mind. And it's very helpful to have that, because really, in order for concentration to arise, we do need to have a certain calmness and peace. We do need to be able to sit in that place of stillness. That place that welcomes whatever comes. And in that welcoming of whatever is there, I think, as Sister Jewel said so beautifully yesterday, it's not like we have to look into it and figure it out, but to let it sit right next to us. And for a while, we know it's sitting right next to us, kind of every once in a while, look off. But as we become more concentrated, what is sitting right next to us comes closer and closer. And soon it's our own hearts and our own minds. And in concentration, the Buddha mind is there holding it, holding the suffering. Completely one with the suffering, no separation whatsoever. And we might break into deep weeping as the forgiveness and the compassion of the Buddha mind washes through us. And that healing balm allows us to let go of our ideas of right and wrong, good and bad, love and hate. So when we look at the five mindfulness trainings, which we will be looking at tonight with a wonderful panel, sometimes it's natural to take an individual thing, individual phrase, and wonder about it. And it's really good to do that, to have it be a place of inquiry, not necessarily a place of a rule. But, for example, if we're wondering about the internet, and wondering if the where we go and what we do on the internet is causing suffering, we're consuming something that's causing suffering, then we simply need to bring our awareness, our mindfulness to bear whenever we use the internet, whenever we're on the internet, and to be aware of what happens in our hearts and minds, to really listen deeply, to have it be a place of inquiring rather than a place of I should do this or I shouldn't do this, but a place of exploration. We can let go of the judgment of ourselves in anything we do. Even when we make a mess, because then that just becomes a place to to inquire, to wonder, to explore. How can I do this better? And the mindfulness trainings are so very, very helpful, because sometimes I mean, we don't have an answer. We don't know why we did what we did. We don't know why our response was such as it was. And then we just take refuge in them. As the Buddha mind. I don't have an answer here. But I trust these. And I'll let them work through me. I'll let them light the path for healing. And sometimes it takes a few years even to answer our questions. We'll have a difficulty with somebody and there'll be struggle. And we come back, not getting caught in our anger and our hatred, knowing our anger is there, knowing our frustration is there. Knowing our resentment is there. And then taking refuge in the mind expressed by the five mindfulness trainings. Not as a way to say, I'm bad, I shouldn't be this way, I need to fix this. But in the same way we take refuge in the Sangha, we come and sit. And we sit in the big heart of mindfulness. And even when we are so distracted ourselves and so hurting ourselves, we just sit because everybody there is sitting for us. We walk because everyone there is walking for us. And the weight that we carry inside of ourselves doesn't have to be so heavy. We can put it down, knowing that everyone in the Sangha is walking there for us. Sometimes our tendency is, in Sangha, is to want to share our pain. And sometimes there will be someone that we're close to in Sangha that we can do that with. But sometimes in sharing our pain, it makes things get bigger. It makes them seem more real and more solid, like this is true. And we have to remember that true mind, Buddha mind, is the mind we're moving from. It's the mind that we are always embraced by. And so it's worth coming back to ourselves. And even if we can't say, I don't know what forgiveness is here, I don't know what understanding or love is here, we still come back to ourselves and take refuge in that is the basis of what we're doing here. And it's from that place we decide whether it's helpful to share our pain or not. From that basis, it's important to look as whether sharing will help the mess or make it worse. And so I always suggest that before we share our suffering, that it's worth coming back to ourselves in that spaciousness and openness and seeing if there's another way for ourselves, another way for each other. And, you know, the other thing I think that happens with the five mindfulness trainings is we think they're sort of global. And we think the Buddha mind is global as well. But in fact, they only are alive in this moment. And if they become global, it becomes, I should be this way, I should act that way, I need to do this. And to the best of our ability, when we can just respond in this moment, is how they live. We can't touch the Buddha mind out there. We can't touch it tomorrow. We can't touch it yesterday. We can only touch it by coming back to ourselves. Breathing in, breathing out. Taking refuge in the moment. Taking refuge in the Sangha. And in that place then of not knowing, of spacious, not vast and fathomless spaciousness, we step forth with the best we have to offer in that moment. So it's really helpful that when we take on the practice of the five mindfulness trainings, you know, we let them be like a mirror that reflects for us, or water that reflects. And it reflects the truth of everything, because, you know, as we've been looking at this whole retreat, everything is profoundly interconnected. But it's also important to remember, I mean, so when we talk about the five mindfulness trainings, we talk about cause and effect, this is because that is. And that is the relative world. But it's also essential and important to remember, it's just cause. 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 And effect. That's the vast, fathomless mind, Buddha mind. It can be called emptiness. It can be called ultimate nature. It can be called the absolute. But any words we put on it just takes us away from what is already true. And we are the living dust of the Buddha mind. We are the embodied breath of illumination. And we are all just acting our parts among a world that is made up of that dust and that breath as ourselves. As each other, as the trees and the grasses. So at this point in our retreat, I think there's a lot of stillness in our hearts and in our minds. And not be creating stillness. Not getting lost in distraction, but really coming back to welcome everything. Really walking with the Buddha's feet, breathing the Buddha's breath, looking with the Buddha's eyes. And from that heart, understanding, forgiveness, and love arises. And we see that we are free. And our true nature is vast and fathomless. So please use every moment, rather than being used by each moment. Use every moment. And your suffering, don't be used by your suffering. Use your suffering come back to heal. And let the Buddha mind hold you.